Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Be sure to remember God. The title of our message tonight, 2 Samuel chapter 14. By way of very, very, very brief review, Saul has died and David has ascended to the throne. After civil war, Israel is unified under David. David takes multiple wives, establishes his government. Many battles are won as the kingdom is extended to the Euphrates. David takes Bathsheba and murders Uriah. He is confronted by Nathan. He is suffering the consequences of those great sins. We saw in chapter 13, his son Amnon raped his daughter Tamar. His son Absalom murdered Amnon. A terrible, terrible state of affairs in the nation of Israel, God's people, the light to the world. The world has been given occasion to blaspheme. Absalom now is in exile in Geshur. His mother is the daughter of the king of Geshur. Very, very sad. Well, in chapter 14, three key points. David is against Absalom, so Joab schemes to change things. Absalom returns from exile to Jerusalem, and after 2 years, finally, Absalom meets with David. Well, we're only going to make it through verse 20 tonight, is our goal. And in these verses, we're going to see Joab sending a woman to David with a false story of strife and murder. David hears this story, passes judgment, and then the woman reveals there's an ulterior motive. She says, David, you're guilty. David sees the trick. The woman confesses that she was used by Joab, and Joab humbles himself before David, and he is sent to fetch Absalom. Our title is, Be Sure to Remember God, and I hope that that makes sense, because really it's a play on a concept, and I hope you never forget it. 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 1, Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. Zeruiah is the sister of David. And so Joab is his nephew. He is the captain of the host, the head of the army. And he perceives that the king, David's heart, his thinking, is toward or against Absalom. David is very angry because what Amnon did to his half-sister Tamar, David is very angry because Absalom murdered Amnon. David is grieved for these, and yet he also grieves greatly because he knows it's his fault, a lot of it, because of his sin, and he is reaping what he has sown. Verse 2, And Joab sent to Tekoa, and fetched thence a wise woman, and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel, and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long mourn for the dead. Here he is intentionally fetching this woman from Tekoa. There are a lot of unanswered questions here. So we have to realize what God did give us to work with and appreciate that. But here he is now. He sees the king's heart is turning against Absalom in exile. And so this moves him to get this woman from Tekoa, approximately 12 miles from Jerusalem, this wise woman. And he sets her up with this deception. Why? It does not come out blatantly and say so. But I do agree with the commentators. I believe it is linked to the fact that Absalom is a murderer of Amnon. And if you were to think back, Joab is a murderer of Abner. And if David turns his heart to compassion towards murderer Absalom, therefore, Joab could reason, David will turn his compassion towards me. Consider 2 Samuel 3:27, and when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly and smote him there under the fifth rib that he died. Why? For the blood of Asahel, his brother. What did Absalom do? Murdered his brother. What was David's reaction to Joab murdering Abner? 2 Samuel 3:29. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue, or that is a leper, or that leaneth on a staff, or that falleth on the sword, or that lacketh bread. David has pronounced a pretty sore, what do you want to call it, a curse upon his house. And apparently this is weighed heavily, and now Joab sees this as an opportunity to remove this. Let's go ahead in chapter 14 and see the results of this deception. 2 Samuel 14:22. Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king, and Joab said, "Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight." I think he breathed a sigh of relief at this point. So that's why I think it's linked, that if you're going to bring back Absalom, which he will in this story, you will therefore bring me back, as I avenged the blood of my brother. Well, Joab sends for this woman to send her to David. Possibly this was inspired by Nathan's parable, but there's a major difference between Nathan's parable and Joab's story. Nathan did approach David, and he did tell a story of a rich man, a poor man, and a little lamb. But I want you to see 2 Samuel 12:1. And the Lord sent Nathan. Look at 2 Samuel 14:2. And Joab sent. The Lord did not send this widow woman. The Lord did send Nathan. And by the way, Nathan was not sent for selfish desires. He was sent to establish justice and set things in order. Joab has a personal gain here. There's very much of a difference. I have to wonder why this lady would accept the request. Well, we don't know. Maybe she was an old friend of Joab. Maybe she owed him a favor. Maybe she was bitter toward David due to his sin of Bathsheba and Uriah. Maybe she just liked a good deception. We don't know, but we do know this. She did her best to do this deception for Joab. And we have surely seen enough of deceptions and lying among God's people in this study. The bottom line is this: David's heart is against Absalom, and Joab is scheming to have this woman deceive David to bring Absalom home from exile. Well, again, this is such a practical chapter because we see sinners interacting with sinners. Joab, the woman from Tekoa, David, Absalom, sinners interacting with sinners. And I want you truly to appreciate this as we go through this chapter. There is no substantial effort on behalf of any of our main characters to seek God in prayer for wisdom in life's troubles. None. And therefore, it is a very, very real picture of what life is like when we don't seek God. Life was never intended to work apart from God. Well, this wise woman, that word wise is the same word used to describe Jonadab, the one who advised Amnon to abuse his sister. Wise or cunning. Not wise in a God-honoring sense, but rather in a deceptive sense. This woman was wise. She feigned herself and pretended to carry this burden, even to the point of the clothing that she wore. We do have to wonder, why didn't Joab just go and talk to David? Whatever happened to that? What's with all this sneaking around? Let your yea be yea, your nay be nay, Joab. Quote, there are several circumstances relative to this woman in her case which deserve to be noticed. She's a widow. Therefore, her condition of life was the better calculated to excite compassion. She lived some distance from Jerusalem, which rendered the case difficult to be readily inquired into, and consequently there was less danger of detection. She was advanced in years, as Josephus says, that her application might have had more weight. She put on mourning to heighten the idea of distress. She framed a case similar to that in which David stood in order to convince him of the reasonableness of sparing Absalom. She did not make the similitude too plain and visible, lest the king should see her intention before she had obtained the grant of pardon. Thus her circumstances, her mournful tale, her widow's needs, her aged person, and her impressive manner all combined to make one united impression on the king's heart. Therefore, verse 3, and come to the king and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words into her mouth. And apparently she had no qualms whatsoever of deceiving the king. Sure, I'll do that. No indication of regrets. No hesitation. Verse 4. When the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance and said, help, O king. This lady probably deserves an Oscar for this performance. And the king said unto her, what aileth thee? And she answered, I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead. Now, you know what? That could have been true. We don't know. But nonetheless, Exodus 22:22, she's praying upon the law. Verse 22:22 of Exodus, ye shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. So David very believably knew that. I am indeed a widow, one of them who needs compassion and assistance, and who God has commanded to have protection and relief. Verse 6. And thy handmaid had two sons, and they strove together in the field. And there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family has risen against thine handmaid, and they said, deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him, for the life of his brother whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also. So they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth. Now here we have got some arguments here of why she is so distressed. She references here the two, one smiting the other. And the one is now going to be avenged according to the law. Now, I didn't give it to you. You can write down the reference. Numbers 35, we talk about the cities of refuge and an avenger. If someone dies and it is an accidental death, they can run to one of six cities of refuge. The avenger cannot get them there, and they can live out their days of an accidental death. But apparently this is not an accidental death. The two brothers were arguing and strove. And so there was guilt here. There is no refuge for this son, and the family is crying out for justice. So she says. They took them the part of the avenger of blood, the nearest akin to the murdered person having the right to slay the murderer. Please take a look at Numbers 35:19. The revenger of blood himself shall slay the murderer. When he meeteth him, he shall slay him. And now this is what she's saying to David. It's all a deception. Quote, Job got her to play upon the feelings of David by telling him her sad story. Just as David had used deception, he was now being deceived. Well, David hears this story and he sends her away, verse 8. And the king said unto the woman, go to thine house, and I will give charge concerning thee. And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, my lord, O king, the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. Now he is sending her home without giving her an answer. Well, that's not the point now. She came there prepared for this deception because the story is only half. She wants to get a commitment from David and then set forth why she really came, what Joab really wants from this meeting, and that is to get to the issue of Absalom. This is all faked. She's not going to accept this delay. Not to mention, where would she go? You want me to go all the way back to Tekoa? It's a long walk. We take 12 miles for granted today. That was a long walk for her, or whatever she had, a cart or something. And you want me to come back? So she presses the king. The iniquity be on me, she says. Listen, I need you to make a decision. Tell you what, king, if you're wrong, it's my fault. I'm not going to hold you guilty. The woman's answer, we infer that David had put her off with a promise because he saw that if he defended the guilty son, he would become involved in his guilt. The mother pleaded the king's help and offered to bear personally any guilt. And remember, this is all a lie. David offers her protection, verse 10, and the king said, "Whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me. He shall not touch thee any more." Then she said, "I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son." And he said, "As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth." And here, I want you to truly reflect. This verse hit me when I was considering this. You have to get the picture. This woman is physically dressed the part. This woman has been coached on what to say to deceive the king. She has her story right. The details are in order. She is pleading the cause of a widow woman. And it's all a lie to deceive the king. And the king is sitting there, And then she says in verse 11, and then she said, "I pray thee," underline it, "let the king remember the Lord thy God." I am lying right through my teeth to you, but you better remember the Lord. Excuse me. You expect me to be honorable while you are living an absolute lie. Throughout this passage, as we continue to study on, this widow woman is going to be referencing the need of a poor widow that God provides for David. Remember what God said. Oh, and how about mercy, David? Mercy, God teaches mercy, doesn't he? Oh, and justice. But I'm lying to you. But you better live up to God's standards of holiness. That blows my mind. Someone so wicked, so deceptive, holds him through deception to a higher standard while they're lying right to his face. Here she is telling a false story and says, "Remember the Lord." You hypocrite. Hence the title of this message, "Be Sure to Remember God." Can you not hear someone say, but Nathan told a story to David. We covered this. Nathan was not out for personal gain. Nathan was literally sent by God to establish justice. David is now being confronted by this woman for Joab's selfish gain. Joab could have come and said, "David, I need to talk." But he didn't. There was no need for this deception. David has empowered this woman for protection to bring anybody that would prosecute her. He will protect her. She wanted him to be committed to honorable decisions and behavior before she moved on to her true intent. She deceived. Remember God. Now let's get to the real issue. Remember God, you promised. David has basically overruled the laws concerning murder and the avenger. You're protected. He's not going to get hurt. Now, David was spared the death sentence from his behavior with Bathsheba and Uriah. And now he is sparing another guilty man worthy of death. And therefore, the woman feels that her trap is now set. She sets it. She releases the trap and said, "Then the woman said, Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one more word unto my lord." The king said, "Say on." And the woman said, "Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one who is faulty." You're wrong, David. "In that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. Your son is guilty of murder, just as the one of my sons. Why would you offer mercy to my son and not Absalom?" She throws off the veil and begins to reveal her real intent, why she is there. She has placed David in a position of imaginary problems. Her family would be cut off. Oh, David. But Absalom's murder was not one of a moment of passion and anger. He calculated it for 2 years. Absalom is a tremendously guilty man. Thus, the deception of Joab, the widow, in her story is to represent Israel. Her dead son represents Amnon. Her son that murdered represents Absalom, and David was the judge in both cases, and you're not being fair, David. My son is protected, and yet your own son. Quote, "The woman, having now got the king's promise, confirmed by all oath, that her son should not suffer the murder of his brother, comes immediately to her conclusion, is not the king to blame? Does he now act a consistent part? He is willing to pardon the meanest of his subjects, the murder of a brother at the instance of a poor widow, and he is not willing to pardon his son Absalom, whose restoration to favor is the desire of the whole nation. Is that clemency to be refused for the king's son, the hope of the nation and the heir to the throne, which is shown to be a private individual, whose death or life can be the consequence of one family? Why, therefore, dost thou not bring back your son?" By the way, Absalom is not going to be the next king. Solomon is. And is this lady really speaking for the nation? Verse 14. "We must needs die. Listen, we're all going to eventually die. Can you give us justice in our lifetime? And we are as water spilt on the ground. We cannot be gathered up again." An expression used periodically in the scripture. It is describing a person, or in this case, like the people of Israel. We're like water poured out. We are so distraught. We're like water on the ground. You can't even gather it to pick it up again. We're so distraught, David. Don't you realize how awful you are, David? Honestly, remember the Lord, David. I'm leading a lie, but David. "Which cannot be gathered up, neither doth God respect any person." Remember that, David. I'm holding you to biblical standards while I'm lying. "Yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him?" So it is, she is now getting to the true issue that Joab has put her up to. David, even God is not a respecter of persons. Verse 15. "Now therefore, that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord the king, it is because the people have made me afraid." Do you understand the peer pressure I'm under? Still living a lie. It's not Joab. It's the people. You have, let me tell you what the people really think. They've pressured me to come to you. "It is because the people have made me afraid. Thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his handmaid." It's these people that have put me up to it. Oh, David, hear my words. Verse 16, "For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God." "Then thine handmaid said," talking to these people, "the word of the Lord, the king shall now be comfortable, for as an angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and bad. therefore the Lord thy God will be with thee. Here, this woman has now poured out her story. I've been pressured by the people to come to talk to you, David. You need to do right. Verse 18. Then the king answered, said unto the woman, hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee. I'm going to get you to commit now before I ask you the question. And the woman said, let my lord the king now speak. Okay, I bind myself to this. I will answer. And the king said, is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? And the woman answered and said, as thy soul liveth, my soul the king, none can turn to the right hand or to the left from aught that my lord the king has spoken, for thy servant Joab, he bade me. And he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid. To fetch about this form of speech hath thy servant Joab done this thing, and my lord is wise according to the wisdom of an angel of God to know all things that are in earth. You're right. I am here as a deception. Joab put me up to this. David saw the hand of Joab all over this. And he was not deceived. Apparently it took a little bit of time, but he said, I am not deceived. I see Joab all over this. I find it very interesting that this woman was willing to come to the king in an outfit of mourning. She came with a well-rehearsed story, and she lied and deceived the king. And yet, when asked, is Joab behind it, she had to tell the truth, yes. I have to wonder why she was all of a sudden compelled to tell the truth. That boggles my mind. I can't answer that. I confess, I can't answer that one. I guess maybe the conviction of the Lord. For thy servant, he bade me. Joab sought to deceive, but somehow God apparently illuminated David to see through the deception. He's been exposed. Well, this is part one of this chapter and this story. We'll pick up obviously next week. But let us remember, we have the very sad reality of life, sinners interacting with sinners. Daily we interact with sinners. We must not do what we see in this passage, the neglect of prayer. We also see here more consequences on David for his sins against God, for taking Bathsheba and murdering Uriah. Let us learn to do right, for the price of sin is great. And although this was said by this lady in hypocrisy, it is right that we would be sure to remember God.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.